Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is October 22 or 21? 21. According to Nye.
It's, the year is over. It's, like, it's y'all February. Can't it's keep fighting me on this. Christmas is week after next. I don't know why y'all be trying to fight me.
Hold on. You hear what you just said? Christmas is week after next.
Niggas are actually advancing. Like, literally, people are advancing their holiday campaigns because with Corona, everybody's just like, let's get to the good stuff. Halloween is going to come and go like that.
Yeah, Halloween's going to be bullshit because you can't move around anyway. You can't take
guys
nowhere.
Niggas
are still going for it, bro?
I disagree.
It's going to be on the
Niggas is going to be outside on Halloween.
True. But I mean, I don't think it's as big as a season this year as it has been in the past. Halloween has become damn near as big as a season as
like Christmas.
The holiday season. Yeah.
Listen, I get that. But niggas is not going to be in the house. Niggas ain't in the house on a random ass September weekday.
True. That's
you think
real.
Niggas going to be... Halloween's on a weekend this year.
Yeah, word.
That's the other part. Like,
this year,
like,
Halloween fell on the weekend.
Atlanta been outside like ain't no Corona.
Them niggas is outside.
It's going to be crazy.
Them niggas
if
is...
If you look at the calendar, remember 2020 was supposed to be perfect. We had Valentine's Day on like a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All the holidays lined up with really long weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And now it's bullshit. Now it's the bullshit. Yeah. I was thinking about, I was over by the Yankee Stadium and I saw one of the Mexican men selling those Mexican wrestling masks.
The Nacho Libre.
Yeah, the Mil Mascaras joint. Yeah, so I think I might cop one for Halloween just because why not?
I've been looking for a Suge Knight suit. I've been looking for
You know what? It's finally. You probably been sitting on that. You probably been sitting on that idea, just waiting until the time was right.
I have been. The problem is I can't find the proper ill-fitting suit.
Word.
To represent the 90s because
it's got to be red. It's got to be red and big.
It's got to be red, and I need like a 56
word.
Long.
Yeah,
right?
Like with mad material bunched up at the ankle. The sleeves is too long. Yeah. And you need the tag on the sleeve still.
So, yeah, you got to have the tag on the sleeve.
Exactly. So I was looking. I tried K&G. I tried all the Foreman Mills. I tried all the good Deacon stores.
Foreman Mills.
Yeah. Portobello.
Portobello.
Who the big tall joints, V? That's hilarious.
They still in business. God bless Portobello's. Shit, but everybody's doing good?
Yo, I'm on like, I mean, everybody already knows I don't sleep like a regular person anyway, but I'm on a full insomniac streak and I don't really like it. And it's not on purpose. And I don't know why. I'm not even like, I'm tired, but I'm not tired. But I just haven't been able to sleep all week. But it's not even been like I've tried to go to sleep and haven't gone to sleep. It's like I've just been doing shit and then looked up and the sun was about to come up. Like normal.
4:30.
Yeah, like I...
It's because you're on that damn Clubhouse.
I've been chilling on Clubhouse. It started because of Clubhouse. It did start because of Clubhouse, but I've been chilling on... And then when I first got up, when I first started like taking a break, I was staying up to catch up on back work, but now I'm just maybe... I'm just up. Yeah.
With this pandemic, I mean, I think a lot of people are suffering through this, like especially people who don't have, the kind of, and I don't mean no
a regular schedule. Yeah,
I'll have to be on Zoom at 9 o'clock mm-hmm. or whatever every day or something like that for work. So like your shit gets all blurred. Like I don't even have really a concept of time. Like if I go to bed at like 1 o'clock, I'm like, damn, I went to bed early.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't have no concept of time. I get up when, I'm getting up weird and my shit is just, every day
the waking up weird is the hard part. There were a couple of days last week where I didn't get up till after 12 and it just threw me off for like the whole, joint. Like, I felt like the day was gone. But yeah, this week I'm going to have to make myself go to sleep because I was stripping and refinishing and cabinet overnight. Like, it's all kind of craziness going on in my house right now.
Kind of dumb shit, yeah.
I feel opposite because I'm on vacation. I'm taking my PTO. So I...
You have an IB free home.
IB free home for 7 days.
How is that?
Wow. How's that?
Woke up at 11 o'clock today. That's
there you go.
What time do you usually wake up?
She gets up around 7:30 or 8. So
wow.
Oh,
minute. I don't see like, oh, girl, you ain't got no energy. I don't know why you.
You got an extra 3 hours.
I'm thankful for that. I talk to my mom friends. They kids get up at 6. So.
Ooh.
Good. I'm rested. I got a little date tonight. I'm very excited.
Oh,
there you go.
I like that.
That's my mom. I legit don't think I was ever a get up at 6 a.m. kid. I don't think that ever happened in my life. I don't think that was a thing.
No, even in utero, my mom was like, nah, you were up at like noon and you stayed kicking through 1 a.m.
I remember one year I went to Kentucky for spring break, excuse me, so when I was in college. And I stayed, my grandfather was still living at that time. So I stayed with him for a good chunk of the trip. And, you know, college, you know, you're getting up, you know, whenever. And I remember I got up one morning, it was about like 9:30. And he was, you know, he'd probably been up since 5 or something. So, you know, he was like, I thought you was going to sleep all day. I was like, it's 9:30. You know, he did a whole bunch of shit. Went to town.
In fairness, I feel a little bad now because I hit Justin with one of those texts the other day. Like... What time we shaking downstairs, baby? What's really good? I feel like I'm waking you up every day. You know, he was like, "Yo, I'm good."
I backed off.
But I definitely was doing the shit that your grandfather just did.
Yeah, like
them Southern elders, they still got farm time. They still had that generation.
My grandfather was a farmer too,
in their bones, so. They would have been up at 5 a.m., made some coffee, read the paper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Watch the CNN.
Filled some soil, fucking.
Man, they have food.
Like, they done had their little morning, prayer time in the closet.
Yeah, all that.
It's time for lunch.
Exactly.
So you eat breakfast. They don't move. They got on their good outside clothes. You still in your pajamas.
Couple dried out sausages left on the stove.
Yeah, exactly.
With the plate on top of it.
Sitting on the burner. That joint.
Exactly. So let's jump into it. We didn't tape our last week. We got a whole bunch of stuff to catch up. Oh. By the way, for the listeners, we fixed our technical difficulties. Sorry for the, 2 week or so off, kind of.
Yeah, maybe we took 3. To catch up, but we always.
Yeah, we had done some shows, but we couldn't post them and da 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 da. But we posted all the old shows last week, so now we're up, obviously back doing new shows. And we apologize and thank you for sticking with us. And we will be consistent from here on out because we fixed our little glitch in the matrix. First thing, it's so much to talk about. Golly, let's talk about a couple of Netflix things. I've been on a Netflix binge, by the way. Have any of y'all watched the 40-year-old version?
Not yet. It was.
I haven't watched it yet.
I did.
You watched Inca?
I heard it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's about this. Is her name Rada Inca? Is it Rada?
Rada.
Roddy, apparently, she's kind of well-known in New York. I don't know her, but I know a few people who know her. And peace to my boy Mickey Fax, who's in the movie. And they play his song a couple times throughout the movie. So she's she plays this character by her namesake, Rada, who's about 40, I guess, in the film. And she's a teacher, but she's kind of wayward. And she doesn't, she likes teaching because she likes the kids. But, she's teaching in the hood. It's a bit of a mess, a fight in the class, the usual crazy shit,
She's like celebrated playwright or playwright who had this great success and is now a teacher.
Exactly. She had this big blast and didn't have kind of a follow-up to that blast and fell into being a teacher. So feeling kind of like a has-been, I fell off kind of thing. So she has this thing where she wants to start rapping, which kind of In a weird way, I guess kind of does make sense because of the words, like using words, and she's kind of using it at that. So she kind of goes sure. into this thing. She wants to start rapping, and you know, it's a story of her kind of like finding this rap passion at this, you know, what's deemed in hip hop as this elder age. You know, she's not old, but she's almost 40. So everybody else is like right. this old lady who's trying to rap, and having her people also take her seriously. In that she really, because she really wants to do this. It's still filmed to me very much like, it reminded me very much of like, She's Gotta Have It. The first.
It's
the
very Spike Lee.
The Spike Lee version. Yeah, the because black and white, just like that. And it's I don't think I knew any of the other actors. I guess, you know, I don't know if they're her friends or they were just kind of like, so it was kind of all these kind of new faces in the film. One of those kids I've seen, I think he lives in Harlem because she lives in Harlem in the movie. And one of those kids, right. and the thing, I think I've seen him up here before, but it was, you know, it was kind of, yeah, it was very Spike Lee-ish in its tone and its look. And even in the kind of the way the story went, it even felt like in some places, like almost, I don't know, not to say they were freestyling the lines, but I think they had a lot of room for kind of, improv and stuff like that. What'd you think about it though, Inga?
I think it wasn't for me. I'm not a huge Spike Lee media fan. I love him and what he's done for the culture, but like this style of movie is not.
It don't work for me.
Like it was kind of funny. I had a couple of laughs. Like we watched it mm-hmm. night, and it just didn't like end for me. Like what did we take away from it?
Yeah, the end was definitely kind of like, okay, so what happens now? Like, because she ended up writing another play.
Like
you did, like the kids,
I see what they were trying to do. Like you get named to this 30 under 30 list. And then all of a sudden you're 40 and it's like, what did I do with all that momentum and where's mm-hmm. success now? But I still don't know what she did with all that momentum and where her success is now.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what happened.
She does end up writing this play about gentrification.
Wasn't that the play that she was famous for, but they were reviving it?
Oh, really? I didn't catch that. Okay, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Right, so I don't think we got any new like products from throughout the movie, so I don't know.
Okay, yeah, I thought it was good. Again, I'm happy for my man Mickey. It's a great look for him. It wasn't from watching how people were talking about it. I definitely thought I wanted more than what people like, you know, you'll see people like on the timeline and stuff kind of raving, you know, and you know, there's a billboard up here in Harlem and like, it's like, it's a big thing. It's a big deal for this woman. God bless her. You know what I'm saying? But like, and I'm not trying to dog the thing. It was good, but I just thought it was going to be
groundbreaking. It wasn't for me. I don't think it resonates outside of New York City.
It's totally New York City. It's Harlem and Brooklyn. Because the producer is from Brooklyn. So it's like, that's it. Like, it ain't even in Queens. You know what I'm saying?
I think even the promo and the key art is very New York. I think
it's... Yeah, with the door knockers and stuff and the head wrap. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other movie I watched, and I watched this last night, so this is fresh on my brain. I don't think you saw it. I watched Cuties.
You know about Cuties?
That's the one with all the controversy.
You were talking about that last night when we were...
Last night, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's been out on Netflix for maybe like a month or so now. Won a bunch of awards, and I think in a couple foreign film festivals. So I'm based in France. It's about this girl who immigrates from Senegal to, I think it's Paris, with her mom and two siblings, and kind of, you know, it has parts of, you know, their African culture, well, their Muslim upbringing, and her being exposed. She's only 11. Like, all the girls in this thing are 11. And her being exposed to kind of, like, social media for the first time. And what it does to her, makes her become, like, this kind of, like, over-sexualized girl. She's not having sex, but, like, you know, she's, like, starts to dress different. Like, you know, wearing her shirt tied to see her waist. And, you know, she's looking at all these videos dancing. So she becomes, like, this kind of, like, there's, like, this little dance troupe. And they're very sexual and... The controversy is because these girls are literally 11 years old in the movie, and they're doing all these kind of like sexual dances and stuff, and people are like, oh, it's like child pornography. But to me, I felt like a lot of people who said that probably didn't watch the movie, because that definitely was in the movie for sure, but it was bigger context than that. It wasn't just about that. It was about how this girl is kind of being forced from social media and from her auntie and her mom to kind of be pushing her to become a woman when she's a child, you know, and right. just kind of like, and how she's confused by this, because her auntie tells her the story. It's like, oh, when I was your age, I got married, you know, and yeah, that, like, and she's not saying it like, and she's not saying it to her like it was terrible. She's saying it like, that's what happens. Like, you're a woman now. And even in the movie, this girl gets her period, and then her mom and her auntie are like, oh yeah, well, you're a woman now. Like, it's about to be, you know, you're about to start. And so it wasn't just about this kind of like over sexualized girls. It was more than that.
From what I'm reading, it was only Netflix America that promoted it that way. Like, everywhere yes. else where Netflix had the trailer, like, that was like a tiny blip in it, and the rest was about her story. Whereas that's the cover photo, is her like popping it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I saw a picture of the other photos that they used around the world, and it wasn't that at all. So
she's not even on
but
it.
You know what is also interesting about Netflix, though? If they keep showing you something using one image and you don't watch it, you keep scrolling past it, they'll change it.
Really?
I've noticed really? That like, they've yeah. done that with me with shows multiple times. When they serve me something that they think matches my algorithm, and I just keep scrolling. One day I'll go on and I'll be like, oh, what's that?
Different picture. That same shit.
Yeah, yeah. They'll change it. They'll
if there's a,
I
if
didn't
there's
watch
a person,
teenage. Go ahead.
And then no, they get mad, right?
If there's a person that even remotely looks black in that movie at all, like at any point in the movie, that's who's on my icon.
Well, that's what they did in the teenage
nigga be in there for like 35 seconds.
it's a black film.
Gas. You know, gas pumper number two. That yeah. nigga's on the icon for me.
Ironically, that's what they didn't do for me with Teenage Bounty Hunters, which I think I might have talked about here on the show. So I kept scrolling.
Yeah, you did.
And then somebody told me about meth, but other people told me that they got an icon with meth in it. And I
got the icon with meth, and I was like, okay, right. Let me watch this now.
Interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I suggest it's a very odd movie, but a lot of the foreign films are odd because the pacing is so different. Like, they kind of move differently, so it's kind of like, what the hell? And it was also very interesting because the lead girl, she's a great, great little actress, by the way. She's not really likable. Like, she's a bad little girl, you know what I'm saying, in most of the movie. So it's not like you're like feeling like, oh my, I mean, maybe a woman would look at it differently from a dude. I was like, damn, this girl's bad, you know, but kind of gets redeemed at the end. So, I mean, I suggest you watch that. Bro, you want to mention the Sweet Pea doc?
Oh, yeah. It's crazy because I did think that we talked about this. So there's a documentary.
If we did, I forgot about it.
There's a documentary on Lloyd Daniels. Lloyd Sweet Pea Daniels, which is a New York City Park legend, incredible basketball player in the 80s, at a particular time when New York City basketball, public school particularly, the hoops was just insane. I think there was like a year or two in the 80s when there was like him, it was Sweet Pea, Rod Strickland, Mark Jackson, Pearl Washington, Kenny Smith, like all mm-hmm. of those guys were in
Kenny
high school.
Hutchinson.
Mm-hmm. Kenny Hutchinson. But that's just the guys that went like to the league, the famous guys. Yeah. That, you know, there's a bunch of other guys that went D1. But it talks about Lloyd, and it talks about all of the, it was a really good documentary because, you know, Lloyd was one of the guys who became sort of the poster child of not fulfilling your potential as a basketball player. And it really talked about Lloyd had a massive amount of dysfunction in his family as a child and growing up. He had basically gone to UNLV, was arrested in a crack house at like fucking 19. He basically ate. He never graduated. Lloyd Daniels will go down in history as the only person to play in the NBA to never graduate high school.
Yeah.
He never actually graduated high school. He aged out of middle school. He aged out of high school. Mm-hmm. He just kind of got passed along. you know, always had issues with substance. In fairness, in the doc, appears that he still might have some issues. It doesn't look bad, and it doesn't look like he's getting high, but it definitely looks like there's some alcohol. He kind of lost his family because of it. Has a son that plays. It was good to just see people who truly loved him still be there for him, because you don't often see that, right? Like, those people are often forgotten. You can't do anything for them. You know, you're not in the pros anymore. You know, your name is not ringing bells anymore, and people kind of shun you. You know, I've seen that from that generation of guys, right? Like, when they start getting high, when they lose everything, people really kind of shun them. And it didn't feel like that was the case here.
Shun them, or they start to clown them.
Yes.
Like, yo, nigga, you used to be nice, nigga. You ain't shit. You know,
exactly. And there are a couple things, you know, and he knows basketball, right? Like, that's like his saving grace. Like, you can tell he still knows the game when you listen to how he's talking to the players, which, you know, I'm not a big fan of some of the language he's using with those kids, but I get it. You know, he's an old school guy. That's how coaches, you know, back then used to talk to us. So it's fine. It's not the end of the world. But it's a great documentary. And the beauty of the documentary is that it's not a redemption story, right? No. Like, he doesn't walk off in the sunset at the end, which actually, to me, was a better film, right? Which gave it a much more realistic approach to sort of following this person's trajectory. He goes back to the scene where he got busted. He talks about when he goes back to the scene where he got shot. Yeah, he got shot like 5 times.
In front of his house.
You know, he had everything that every ill that New York City suffered between the 70s and 80s, he literally had a hand in that. Whether it was street violence, family dysfunction with child welfare not really being there for him, school dysfunction, you know, the Board of Ed dysfunction.
Everything.
You know, crack. All of that shit.
He smoked. He used to smoke. Like, and they did this cool, I'm gonna call it cool. I don't know if cool is the right term, but they did this interesting thing where, after about maybe like the halfway point of the documentary, they started to use these what's it called? Voicemails that he would leave for the producer of the film. And it would be like, yo, Ben, Lloyd Daniels, your man, yo, we got this great movie, man, can't wait, da-da-da-da. Then they're like, woo, yo, Ben, yo, I need $200,000, man, I need $200,000 to pay my bills, man. And boop, Ben, you ain't call me back, man, fuck you. Like,
it was very, I wouldn't say he was on crack, but it felt very cracky.
It was crack adjacent.
It was crack adjacent, my nigga. It was like, yo.
Yeah.
But I get it, right? Because what happens is, you know, during this time, you know, they're kind of supporting this guy for his time. He should be paid for his time. So I don't want to make it seem like, you know, whether or not he was adhering to whatever agreement they had, I would have no idea. But he should have been compensated for his time, because clearly this guy took this film and got it on Amazon, right?
So
there was money to be made. And he is from him specifically. He understands how his name has benefited others more than it has himself.
Yeah.
And so he is ultra conscious about that. And you can clearly tell he has a real distrust for old white men. Like, that's really what it sounded like to me. Like, you know, I know what this is, and you're not going to, you know, rip me off.
Get over me. And this is probably this might be my last shot to make any type of decent money.
Nigga,
so I got to have this.
Yeah, like, I can, if I get this bread and I could pay my rent for the remainder of the year, nigga, like, I need it.
Yeah. So it was very interesting. Like you said, it was interesting because it wasn't like, at the end, Lloyd turned out great. It's like, nah, he probably didn't turn out great, but it was very interesting. It's on Amazon Prime. I recommend it to people. Let's jump into Lovecraft. was tonight. This was the season finale. We haven't talked about it for. Wait, hold on. Before I do that, have either? I know me and Sean really haven't, but have any? Is you two ladies been keeping up with Real Housewives of Potomac?
No,
I have.
So why don't you talk? I've been kind of watching, you know, like highlight video, you know, video people reviewing it on YouTube, and so I kind of know what's going on, even though I haven't actually seen it. Right. It seems to be a pretty controversial season. Why don't you talk a little bit about Anchor?
Okay, so we all know that Monique and
Candace
with that weird eye.
Candace with the weird eye.
Candace got her ass whooped at the winery, right? Which Candace has been asking for that ass whooping for a couple seasons.
Has been asking fervently for the ass whooping.
Fervently. Without letting up.
Because the mouth is slick.
I sincerely think that if Karen hadn't gotten between her and Monique when Monique was pregnant at the last winery,
she would have got it.
Pregnant at all.
Because let's just be clear, Candace is a Jack and, you know, I'm not saying this disparagingly, Candace is a Jack and Jill kid, she's raised very bougie, blah, blah, which is fine, it's not a bad thing. But Monique is from, like, Atlantic City.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. But Monique is from, like, Atlantic City. She's living good now, but she's from the hood. So she's not going to take all that. It was going to pop off because I think Candace is used to being the loudmouth because most of the people she probably grew up around would never cross that line.
Right.
Monique has no problem.
But also now that she's grown, she doesn't expect people to cross that line, especially not on camera. So I think she's doing it for attention and to be good TV. And like I said, also that's how she's been taught to respond because that's what her mother does, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you look at the dynamic between her and her mom, she's never been taught conflict resolution.
Monique is the woman for, you know, there are some women for whom the phrase applies, ain't going to be but so many.
Yeah, ain't going to be but so many bitches in here.
And she's that girl.
Yeah, she's that girl.
Yeah, yeah. So go ahead, Nico.
I think what you're seeing, as far as the reaction on social media is like, everybody is kind of taking the side of messy Giselle and Robin and being like, this should never happen. And Black women have to be better than this on television and blah, blah, blah. When I'm like, Candace, you know, is calling her like a hood rat and saying you're so ghetto and blah, blah, blah. But like, your mother hit you with a purse in the face last season. You've been up in everybody's face. Since then, you are married.
You came at somebody with a butter knife.
Two baby mamas.
Yeah.
Who's more ghetto than you?
Yeah.
Like throwing it like it's an insult. When I'm like, hold on, sweetie. Just because you're not throwing your hands, it doesn't mean that someone else is not going to throw hands at you. Like you are still very much this the housewife stereotype, which is praying into some mess, being from some mess yourself, and then checks that your ass can't cash. So. I mean, I'm with Monique. I know she didn't feel any remorse, and people are, like, mad about that. But the day after you whip somebody's ass...
My thing is this. And this is what I said about Cardi when people were mad that Cardi threw a fucking shoe
at Nicki.
After, you know, after Onyeka had a, you know, and was ready to get at her even though she was pregnant. I don't give a fuck how grown I am. Too many people didn't actually come up shooting a fair one. So there's a certain caution with which you handle yourself when you've had to actually square up behind your words before, right? And if your words have never led to you getting popped in the fucking face, then you tend to be reckless. And I don't, no matter how grown I am, there's only so much I'm gonna let you give me before something has to happen. Because obviously the only thing you're gonna respect is a two-piece. And that might sound terrible. I'm not saying violence is the answer, but sometimes violence is an answer. Like sometimes you need-
It's generational. Like y'all like, were
and that is generational.
Somebody hits you, you hit them back. Whereas like the end of that millennial kind of curve.
Yeah, the whole zero tolerance.
Violence is not an answer. But they started charging you as an adult.
Yeah. The problem with the zero tolerance shit is that, like, I'll use Kenya Moore as a perfect example. Kenya will do this shit, like, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you, bitch, da 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 da. And then, like, the minute you get at her, she's like, oh my God, you're violent Black women, you're gonna stop. Bitch, see, it's like, people.
It's really surprising from Kenya, because she's from Detroit. Like, you should know better. But
she,
I don't know.
She
maybe
grew up
in a house with no siblings
she,
and nothing like that.
I think she grew up in the other Detroit.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
But then, but then people want to shame you. It's the same thing with, like, you know, the way right wingers act when somebody fucks their ass up for being racist, and all of a sudden they're a victim. It's like, nah, B, it don't, no.
You started this whole shit.
Fuck all that sticks and stones shit. Like, nah, it's nah. Sometimes fans are warranted.
And I did see, like, online that, like Inka was saying, like, a lot of people were trying to side with Candace and including, I guess, on the show, Giselle, like, said, and Robin, and basically being like, and Giselle playing herself,
Giselle
apparently,
with
saying,
the security.
Like, I have an image to uphold, me and Jamal. It's like, shorty, are you kidding me? This nigga's got 7 baby mothers. Like, what?
Speaking of ghetto.
Oh, what?
Dead ass. We have an image to uphold. It's like,
she was like, he's the pastor of a mega church, and I am dating him, so our image is important, and I can't be around you.
Wait a minute, hold on.
Excuse me? She said
that on air with
on
a
hot air.
Yes.
In the little meeting/intervention they had for Monique for whooping.
I saw the part of the intervention, and I just want to say, I thought it was gross. I thought it was gross because they never liked that girl. Like, that's the reality here.
From
they never let her all the way in.
Like, they never, they not even let her in. They despised her. They never wanted to be around her. They did not like her.
Immediately.
And this was almost like they had their moment to soapbox about why they didn't want to be around her, and I don't feel safe, and all of this other shit, and, you know, a whole bunch of bullshit. And the reality is, you know why she did what she did. And look, was Monique probably putting a little sauce on it? Sure.
Yeah.
I've also been in fights where right before I punch a motherfucker, like, everything ain't always clear to me afterwards. Nigga, like, I...
yeah.
He
she
said this.
That her adrenaline was still so high.
Yeah, like your adrenaline is so pumped in those situations. Like, you remember things. Like, I'm not saying she's playing dumb. You know, you remember things, but it's not always as accurately as the person that's not in that situation is remembering it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah, was she putting a little sauce on it? Sure, but like, I thought the whole, we got to be better than this shit. It was all bullshit, and it was whack. It was fucking whack.
Yeah, I also felt like from the door, like Russ said, they didn't like Monique because, again, Monique's from Atlantic City. I don't think she even graduated college because she met Chris. She was like a dancer or something.
Yeah,
and
I think she went to like 2 years of school or something like that.
Hey, yeah, something like that. What's up, Trav? But the bottom line is, like, for she, if you just kind of look on paper, I guess, it's like, as far as like assets and stuff like that go, she is the most Potomac one. Maybe her and Karen. She got they got houses, they got the cars, they got the money. Like, she, more than the other ones who claim to be Potomac, Robin and Giselle and them. And I always feel like Giselle specifically looked at her and said, "You have my life. Like, I'm supposed to have that.
And you don't deserve it.
You don't deserve it. You ain't even, you don't deserve to have all this shit.
You don't have the pedigree. You don't have this pedigree."
Exactly. It's about pedigree.
There you go. There you go. So, I don't know if I'm going to catch up because I feel, I mean,
it's not for nothing. I'm sorry. Not for nothing. Ashley ain't got that fucking pedigree either. That chick is.
No, we saw, we know where her mom, what her mom is.
Nigga, her mom might take some of them DVDs, nigga. Nigga,
like,
Michael,
but her
Michael
mom leave
around
the house. You got to do a sweep just to make sure he doesn't walk out the house with her mama.
Where my Peloton bike, nigga? The whole bike. She take it out piece by piece.
It's some screws on the ground. That's all that's left. You know,
not for nothing, though, like, with this season, the fight is probably, if you look at the preview for the next few episodes, the fight is the least interesting thing that's going on.
Really? And that's the main thing they promoted.
Juan are getting real shaky after some shit happened.
I thought they were on the road.
Kids, like, hater, so that's weird. Karen and Ray are on the rocks. Like, there's
I've been reading about your nigga Ray. Want to move to Florida. He's like, I'm tired.
My nigga Ray done had it up to here. He ain't married no business gal, okay? He married him a home gal. And y'all need to make him a tuna fish sandwich, goddamn it. That's what he signed up for, nigga.
They're empty nesters now. They supposed to be chilling for that years, and this bitch is building whole new brands and
writing books.
Wearing clothes her daughter should be wearing, trying to get it popping. It's like the son.
She's so annoying.
Because this is what happens, right?
It's a very 30 and 50 are very sexy ages.
Correct.
Because 50, he's still spry. Like Ray is out there.
Yeah. 50, yeah.
He's in the world. He got money. He got the beard. He got the Mercedes in the driveway. You know what I'm saying? He's still knocking the bottom out every couple of days. You know what I'm saying? But when it's 50 and 70,
that's nigga,
you got to go to the aisle to get some Pampers.
I feel like that's similar to what we're looking at with Nene and Greg. Greg ain't 70, but Greg ain't 50. You know what I'm saying?
Greg is sniffing 70.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He's sniffing his mid 60.
And I'm saying that a little bit tongue in cheek,
but in all sincerity,
that level of age gap is something you have to consider as you age. Because Karen is in a very different position in her life. And in fairness to her, you know, she's raised her children. You know, she wants to have her own identity. She doesn't want to just be Ray's wife. You know, Ray has come off a tough financial run. He had some tax issues. It actually looks like it has, you know, I've seen 70-year-old spry motherfuckers.
Yeah,
so I ain't,
yeah.
It looks like it weighed on Ray. It looks like it hurt Ray.
He's not the same guy as he was when the show first started.
It looks like it took a little life out of him, and he's trying to figure that out. And that's a very difficult thing to figure out at 70, particularly when there's all this sort of upheaval in your personal life, right? The kids are gone. Yeah. My wife is not home anymore. I don't really have that routine anymore. So I say all
Anthony's
that in jokes.
Pushing him to keep overhead up instead of bringing overhead down, which
that's just the reality, right? Is that that's another stressor, and you know, look, I'm saying all of this as an armchair, you know, psychiatrist or therapist or whatever, right? Like, I don't really know what the fuck is happening in their life. I'm just basing this off the show, but I do want to say, man, like, I really do wish them well, because I think they love each other, and I think that they're just kind of in these weird, different places in life where life is just shifting for both of them.
Yeah. I could imagine being at that age, Ray's age 70. Also, you know, I don't know how many of his folks married women that much younger. So if they married, well, most of those married women around the same age, like, all his peoples are doing what he wants to do. They going to Florida. They moved to South Carolina. They retired. And he's like, yo, I'm here by myself.
And also imagine, I'm here and I got to go hang out with fucking Juan and Michael.
Exactly.
And
Ashley.
Like, who the fuck?
Yeah.
And Chris.
Yeah, I don't even know these motherfuckers. Yeah, I don't fuck with these niggas.
I need some cognac and a goddamn armchair.
Exactly.
And some Robinson and the Miracles. And
they got a brand new mortgage on that giant ass house right now.
And they should have went and got a two-bedroom condo downtown D.C.
A two-bedroom condo.
That's all y'all needed. So I'm jump back in as some of this stuff is over. Let's jump into Lovecraft real quick. So it was the season finale. I had to watch this one twice, man, because I watched them all twice. Yeah, I did. I watched people say, I watched it twice, and I watched the reviews on YouTube to catch things that some people might have seen that I didn't quite pick up on. What did you think about the finale?
So I think we got to go back, because we haven't talked about it in a while.
Yeah.
That end of season arc, I thought was amazing, because I don't even think
the last three, maybe talking about
did we even talk about Hippolyta?
I don't
remember.
I think that episode changed my life.
Hippolyta was the last episode I think we talked about here.
Yeah, it is. It was.
From the episode,
so we didn't talk about the. Did we talk about the Korean one?
No, I don't think so. And we didn't talk about D with Topsy and Bopsy.
Topsy and Bopsy.
Who,
by the way, choreographed by Jamaica Craft. Like, it was kind of bugging me out because it's like they were scary, but also they was getting it.
They was getting it. No.
This is terrible, but like, I took a corner of an edible and like forgot about it. As soon as the dolls showed up moving like puffy combs,
I was like,
I had to watch that episode two or three times
because by the end of the episode, yeah. I was scary. I was feeling it, but like when they were closing in on her at the shop, I was laughing. Yeah. I was like, y'all, they gigging. Like, I can't.
Yeah, that's what it was with me. Like when they first showed up at the subway stop, like, you know, you first see the faces, it's like, oh shit. But like you said, as soon as they started moving, I was like, I wasn't scared. I was just like, amazed. I was like, yo, this dancing
is fucking crazy.
Incredible. Yeah. Like, are you watching what these girls are doing?
In this episode, the horror part of the episode is the least scary part. Like, it's always the racism topic.
It's always the racism.
Which is intentional, which I think is amazing. So that episode with D, I mean, listen, we've talked before about how, you know, with Lovecraft, with the through line, we have the through line, but there's all these different individual stories. So every character has had their own story, their own moment. And I thought the girl who played Dee just did like a magnificent job. And
the fact
that it brought it back around to this happening the day of Emmett's funeral, Emmett Till's funeral. Mm-hmm. So the Hippolyte episode was outstanding. That was outstanding. But then last week, when they went back to Tulsa on the night of the massacre, that is one of the most powerful hours of television I've ever seen. Because first of all, even those of us who are steeped in, you know, we were taught well, our parents put us on, whatever. Not even all of us knew about the Tulsa massacre, right?
I don't think we've ever seen it. Like, honestly.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah, it just re-entered like the public Black historic conversation relatively recently, right? Thanks to the internet
and to Watchmen,
and they portrayed it on Watchmen, right? Which was a lot of people, not even just white people, a lot of Black people's first time really learning about it, and then to discover that that was a real thing. But drop us in the middle of it. I said that it was a similar, like a TV similarity to when James Cameron put us as viewers on the Titanic. Like, to put us in the middle of that day, going into that night.
Instead of just the attack, it gave us preview, like, of these people living their lives.
Of the people involved, of the life of the town, of what it was. Mm-hmm. And Michael K. Williams, holy shit.
Yeah,
like if he doesn't get
all the awards for this, then
I want this nigga to get small business awards, teacher of the year awards. Like, I need him to get
Nobel Prize, award,
like anything that's available to him. The Tony, like, give it all to him, because he always plays. We talked about this on here. He always plays a very layered character who is so much more than he seems, and he always plays a very troubled character who clearly comes from trauma, but. Just the look on his face, that whole episode. You know what I mean? Like
him looking down the street as it started to burn. Like, I was feeling like it was my house.
And then talking about the people and talking about the people.
Those were real people.
Remember?
Those were all real people. So just to have their names called and remembered. And apparently even like Journey, when she did that last walk through fire, some of that was real flame. She burned her arm. Like, just knowing what they all went through. I can't imagine where he had to go to emotionally to play that, to play that role that day, right? So, I told people, because I have a few friends who've like had to kind of put Lovecraft to the side because it was too scary for them and whatever. And I was like, even if you don't watch the rest of the season, you got to watch this episode. You must watch this episode.
Yeah.
And so to come to the finale, so here's my thing. I did not expect Lovecraft, I think I've said on the show before, I don't actually like it when seasons or series tie themselves up in a bow at the end. I don't like neat finishes. I feel like it's cheating, right? I feel like it's cheating and that it takes something away from the entire experience for you to set us up and have us on the edge of our seats and all of a sudden be like, no, everything's fine. Like, it takes something away from the experience as a viewer because you're just like, oh, it's going to work out somehow, right? So I'm okay with the fact that and this is a spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, I'm okay with the fact that we lost Tick. I'm okay with that. Mm. But because it would have felt too neat otherwise for all we've been through. I did see a lot of people complain that like everything just went too fast. And I think that's also because we are used to, after the final climactic scene, there's always like a postlude where you see looking like they're moving forward. And we didn't get that either. It was just like, okay,
it's over. You know? Yeah.
And there was a moment where I was like, how is there only 10 minutes left in here? I did feel like it moved very quickly. But overall, like, I think that this was the moment we were building to. This is what we're waiting on. And I do think there's room for a season two. I think there's room for a Dia Hippolyta season. I just don't know. We wouldn't get it before like 2022 because they would have to write, because this one they had source material. They would have to write it, figure out the storyline, what is it, shoot it, you know, all that type of shit.
Yeah, I loved a lot of the finale. First of all, I didn't catch till later. I didn't catch immediately that was Christina in Ruby's
body.
It took me a minute. I was like,
how did this happen? I knew she was either betraying her or it was Christina, but like I caught it right before Letty caught it. Yeah.
But in watching one of my reviews, somebody dropped a jewel. I guess way back to the top, episode one, they played that shaboom shaboom, that song that's in the car.
Yeah.
And Ruby said, it's episode one, she's like, I hate this song.
Oh.
So the fact that she was singing it in the car was like, wait a minute, you hate this fucking record. Why would you?
I definitely didn't remember that.
Yeah, yeah, but I loved maybe the not right word, but I thought it was very interesting that they showed Ruby character trying to be the one that basically was trying to integrate. She's like I'm trying to go into this white shit. And figured that would protect her.
Yeah.
And in the end, she got killed by the very thing that she was trying to, you know, was enamored by and trying to get to, which was whiteness and the, you know, I guess the protection of power that she thought whiteness would give her, ended up killing her.
Somebody compared.
I don't think she's dead though.
She's
at least in a coma. You have to be alive for them to use that to
do the magic.
Okay. I like that character. So I'm not. That girl's beautiful, by the way.
She's also she went to shoot another series. She has another series starting on Netflix soon. It's another kind of horror series. It's The House or His House or something like that.
Okay.
She's in that because she's actually a British.
She's British.
Nigerian.
Yeah, Nigerian. She's Nigerian.
So anyway, she was about to say. I lost my train of thought that quick. It'll come back. Oh, somebody compared the shot of her and Christina in the car together to the shot of Suge and Pac in the car together.
Right. I saw that.
That was undone because it actually.
Yeah. It looked like it.
It looked like it. It really looked like it.
I don't think Misha Green.
I don't think one was on purpose, but it really
did. I do. I kind of do. I don't think that they're doing anything by accident. I don't think they do anything.
Misha admitted, like, fans have been asking her about stuff because we're so used to everything being so intentional on the show. And Misha has admitted that some things have been by accident or a mistake. So okay. There's a couple of things. But
okay. I love that D killed Chris, like killed Christine, like at the end, like D was the one, like you still don't get it, like you basically tried to destroy my family, and you're asking me for my help, like get the fuck out of here.
I didn't have mixed feelings about this. I was okay with that, but some people were like, yo, I wasn't really trying to see, you know, 12-year-old black girl who once again, like the family, you know, is somewhere else and she's by herself and she's killing this woman, and now she's got this trauma with the monster beside her. And I'm like, we have
this. The monster wasn't trauma. That monster was protecting her.
I know, but it's like she's got trauma because she's still been through all she's been through, and her mother came back and was just like, this is what Twitter was saying. Oh, I got you this arm, but nobody still dealt with her, and you know, and she has to be the one to kill this white woman. But it's like, for me, this is when I feel like we do too much about the whole black trauma thing. Because There's a whole genre of movies with little white girls who are 12-year-olds are fucking saving the world, killing people, going through shit, losing parents. Like, it's a whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. Post-apocalyptic movies are like, or dystopian movies, like, it's almost all, it's like, it's a whole young adult genre, right? Teen mm-hmm. genre, whatever right. you call it. So it's like, I don't have a problem with that at all. Like, it's fine.
Me neither. It also, like, that story arc took place over, like, 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to kill the person that just made me lose my arm yesterday. Like, yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly. Great fear.
And exactly. I do think that, like, being exposed to, even in that short period of time, seeing this new confidence in her mom, seeing mm-hmm. proof that her mother had traveled somewhere, right, and seen yeah. some things and come back, did give Dee a sense of resilience. And that Dee also realized when the monster came to protect her that, like, okay, her family, like, they could handle this, right? Mm-hmm. And the other, and I think that, like, when people, like, but Dee was still traumatized, like, yes, I did notice it in that episode, like, Dee was trying to get everybody's attention, everybody was distracted and on their own shit, but I think that we're not giving her enough credit to think that, like, like, nothing in her in that scene looked like that was self-possession to me. And I also had the, I also knew that the arm was coming because I didn't know it. Somebody hinted to it that the person who gave, if you remember when Tick came back from the future, he said he wasn't over there that long
mm-hmm.
on the portal. Somebody with a, in a hood with a robotic arm gave him the book and sent him back. Right, and so when okay. we saw that Dee's arm was jacked up, added to her mom, somebody was like, "I think that's gonna be Dee because she's gonna lose her arm." And I was like, "Oh shit, that is gonna be Dee because Dee's gonna know it's him and be like, you need this." So that's the other reason why.
The same way he, the same way he was the stranger who saved Montrose and him with the baseball.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that Tick also knew that whether they got Christina or not, in order to not fuck with this future that his son was gonna have. He had to sacrifice himself for his family, which is like the one thing that I hate about the whole thing is that he and Letty never got a minute to sit together with the fact that she was pregnant, like at all. They was just going, like, they had that one moment in the church and that one moment in the elevator. Like, when they held hands in the elevator, I was like, fucking finally, goddamn. Like, they never even had a conversation about
that. That's just chill. Mm-hmm.
She didn't really tell them. Like, the first time they even acknowledged it between each other was in Tulsa, where she's like, I guess we'll call him George. Like, she hadn't told him. You know what I mean? So it's like, but she realized he knew. They never got, like, their relationship was built on this fear and trauma and, like,
and the magic and all that shit
together and the magic, like, they never had a chance to be as a couple, and that's the one thing that's really tragic to me about that story.
What was you gonna say?
I lost my whole train of thought. I just thought, well, this is controversial, but the last episode was the one I liked least, I think.
I think it was just meant to clean up some shit, I feel like.
Yeah.
It was an ending. Like,
I wasn't warm and fuzzy. I wanted to be warm and fuzzy. Like, at the end of every episode, I'm supercharged. And at the end of it, I was like, damn.
Yeah.
But,
I know the other thing.
We were watching Tick prepare everybody else for his death.
Exactly. And the other thing that really, I guess, triggered me or whatever was, and I guess, I don't know if this is, I think it was episode 9, it was second to last, was when Letty, when the Ticks, I don't know if it was his great aunt or whatever, gave him the book, Letty the book of names, and was like, this is going to be a parade, and she burned in front of her, like, this, like, that was just, like, to watch.
And when she said, my great-grandchild will be my faith made flesh, that made me think of my great-grandma.
It made everybody think of some other ancestors, and then like to watch her burn like that, like, and just that was just like, man, like
she chose to watch her burn because she told Letty to get out of there. She was like,
I think she wanted to stand there and witness with her. Yeah, she didn't want her to go through that alone.
Yeah, alone.
And also,
the
thought that I think this is another interesting concept. So we talked about how the show plays with different genres of horror, suspense, and sci-fi. So there was like the action adventure joint. There was like the straight up horror movie joint. There's been the Afrofuturism joint.
Yeah.
And this
Indiana
one was
Jones
like,
one.
Yeah. Yeah, and this one was like the time travel joint, which, you know, there's the casual loop theory, which is that basically you can't, when you're time traveling, sometimes, so like the with Tick, right? Tick was the guy with the bat, right? So as a kid, come in the future, Tick knew he was the guy with the bat, even though he hadn't been to the past yet. So he has to go to the past to be the guy with the bat. Like, there's basically no origin point. There's no point at which the first time.
But they talked about that, the time doesn't run linear. Like,
linear,
time moves in all kinds of different ways.
Yeah, so it's like a circular theory. Like, you had to have gone back to the past to make the thing happen that happened in the future type thing.
Yes,
so I think also with Letty, she was struggling with that, like, they might have burned down in this house because I was here to get the book.
Yeah,
do you see what I'm saying? Because they could have rolled out. Because
they followed her there. Yeah.
Exactly.
So all in all, bravo to the series. Bravo to Mishi Green.
Really ambitious, bravo. But really well executed. And that's what I think some people don't understand when they're like, Lovecraft is doing too much. It's very ambitious, but the show, honestly, is really well executed. Like,
even when
it feels like there's a lot, even when there's something that feels like a hanging thread, to your point, even about the life is but a dream, it picks up somewhere later.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing is really left hanging, which is why I want to go back and watch from zero again.
Yeah.
Because now I'm going to pick up some things like, oh, I didn't see that, however.
Yeah.
And like I said early on, when we were talking about this, I heard an interview with Mishi Green, and she said that was her goal, was to throw mad shit into every episode.
Yeah, and she did
that. She was doing it on purpose. She was doing that on purpose. Yeah, she's like,
I'm
not holding
nothing back. I think it also just took us through, I think making us feel disoriented was also like intentional, right?
Yeah.
Like, a lot, exactly. Right? And frantic. And this is one of those shows, I think, that some people, you know, you get engaged with a show like a Game of Thrones or something, and you'll do like the forums and the spoiler platforms, but there are some shows that are worse. Like, I couldn't tap, for me, with Westworld. I loved Westworld, but it was hard for me to get into, and I couldn't get all the way into it until I started looking at some spoiler forums. I just had to, because I couldn't put it together by myself. And once I could, I was like, oh shit, okay, now I get it. And I did the same thing for other people. I was like, once you get past this episode, hit me, I'll tell you what to look at, and then it'll kind of click together.
It'll come together, yeah.
And that's okay, but like, I think that it's so important that not only, like I said, the historical references that people may not even know to catch, right? And there have been spoken word, there's been art, art references, there's been, you know, just regular actual things that happen in history, names, places, all that stuff. Even the neighborhood where Letty moves into, if you notice that last episode, there's a black family moving across the street.
She was like the pioneer.
That literally was, in real life, the first neighborhood on north side of Chicago that black people started moving into. Right. So, but first, there was a whole bunch of bullshit with the first black family, right? Mm-hmm. So, but if you don't know that, the reference, so
you understand why the things are.
But there have been podcasts, and then there's also this site called The Langston, which I want to recommend because they did a full syllabus for every episode. So it means like related books you can read, songs, other movies in the same genre, the historical references, like literally a whole syllabus for every episode, which I think is very dope. Something beyond a recap, but like, here's other things that you can read about, get into. If you look, you know, if you like this, you'll like this type thing. So I love the work that people put in around it, because Mishi Green and her directors and her writers and everything, they clearly put a lot of work into it.
Mad work, yeah. So love to them, and hoping we'll get a season two. We know it's going to take time, and we'll happily wait, because the show. And again, I'm going to watch the joint.
I'll just watch it again.
Yeah, exactly. I'll also watch it again. By the way, sidebar, either one of y'all catch Issa Rae on Saturday Night Live?
I did.
I didn't like it. I like Issa. Yeah, I just didn't think
it was a forum for her. Like, Saturday Night Live is for your, you know, people who have been on Saturday Night Live before. Like, I don't think that's the thing. This is not a season, especially where reality is so much funnier than anything that they can write.
True.
Where you can be like a newcomer and not really considered a comedian and do well on it.
Yeah.
right now. So, I mean, she was true to like who she is, but yes,
it's not for that. I'll give an example. Like, she had a skit where she was on a first date with a guy, and they were saying, oh, it's the first time we've been out because of the pandemic. And blah, blah. And so they're eating at this little restaurant, and then like a homeless guy comes up and he knows her. And he's like, oh, and they come find out that they dated or whatever. And the dude's like, you dated that thing? Like, and then there's a couple other people who kind of come up as well. Now, that would have been dope. It would have worked on Insecure. On Insecure, that would have been a cool scene, like her eating with somebody, and kind of like how in Insecure, remember, the airport security guy came up when she was on a date with Lawrence. And Lawrence's like, you dated that nigga? You know, so her thing, like, I saw a couple sketches on there that I could tell she probably wrote or helped write that would have worked on her show. But it doesn't work, like you said, in a broader context.
Like, it was a good episode. It just didn't hit.
Exactly.
Like I wanted it to hit. Jim Carrey's portrayal of Joe Biden falls completely flat for me. Like, it does.
A lot of people were complaining about that.
I don't think they're using Maya Rudolph as Kamala well.
I think that going from what I've seen clips of, well, from the episode with Megan and Chris Rock and with clips I've seen, the problem with Carrie's Biden is that it doesn't have Biden's kind of warmth and slyness. Like, Biden is like your jokey uncle. He might slide you a little cash. He might, you know, crack a couple jokes. Right. Like, there's like a wry playfulness under.
Yeah, Jim Carrey's Biden is just kind of like creepy.
He's doing Fire Marshal Bill as Joe Biden.
Yes, I agree.
So I don't know. So that's the one to mention. But, you know, peace to
Issa. I think she looked great. And I enjoyed
She looked amazing. She looked amazing. And, you know, God bless her, you know, getting that shot. And, you know, God bless. Let's mention, you know what? Let me hold on for now. I want to also mention, I watched, you all know, I watch all the OWN shows. So Black Love is an OWN show that they, you know, you black couples of all different, you know, kind of variations, money, you know, they have gay couples, whatever, and they kind of talk about their, you know, how they met, and, you know, their love path, I guess, and, you know, how they are kind of holding their relationship together and things they dealt with, blah, 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 blah. So this week, it was kind of like a very special episode because they didn't do that. There were couples on there, about six couples, but it was two back-to-back episodes. It was actually 2 hours, and they talked about COVID. And they talked about
how it has affected people, black couples.
Yes, because Jazzy Jeff and his wife was on there. Jazzy Jeff had it. And he talked about, you know, and so each person kind of talking about like how they got sick and they didn't know they were sick. And Jazzy Jeff was like in Europe. He's in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And he was seeing people walking around with the mask, and they were like, and he said when he came back, he was like, on the plane, he's like, I don't feel right. Like, and then like his journey with it, and God bless, he's bad now, better now. There was another couple who the woman got it, and she was like, yo, I was about to say bye. Like, she I was so sick, up, I was ready. Yeah. I was ready to die. Like, I was ready to go. And the husband was like, fuck that. Like, you gonna die? Just going to die because I ain't got time for your bullshit. I don't know if that was the right approach. But it worked.
It worked for them.
Go ahead.
So I will say, thank you for making me watch this, because I'm going to carry Vonnie and Abby and their daughter Skylar in part. I did not expect for that to end the way that it did. And I mean, spoiler alert or whatever, but their 5-year-old baby, they're both first responders. Vonnie is a police officer. Her husband's a fire in Detroit. They lost their 5-year-old, and they in excruciating detail.
Hold your thought. I was going to say one thing about them. Like, just understand that they're not young.
No, they're not young.
I don't know if she'll have another child. They look to be in their 40s. Like, they weren't.
She'd been a police officer for 26 years.
26 years, exactly.
So this was that she didn't expect to have.
Exactly. And it felt like they were probably second marriages for them, because they weren't even married like 8 years or so.
They had this beautiful 5-year-old, and I just. Hearing their experience and the way that, like, nobody had information. Like, they both had it and didn't know. They didn't know the symptoms. The doctors, even the people in the emergency room, like, were just trying shit to see what stuck at the wall, were reluctant to try things to save this five-year-old. And it just, it makes me so angry. Like, it, you have no space in my life if you're not taking this seriously.
Right.
You have to, because there's no reason that Skylar is dead right now. Like, all of this shit is preventable. That's and I could not imagine sitting on a sofa and having to, like, recount this experience and being, like, biting the inside of my mouth bloody to not be so angry at this fucking administration.
And they kept sending her, they sent her back home. Yeah, they sent the little girl back home because Skylar caught it, like, in, like, March. So it was early. Mm-hmm. So nobody really quite knew what it was. And so they were like, well, just go back home. And if she can feel bad, then come back. And then, like, come, like, later on, as it goes, like, the Skylar's got, like, bleeding on the brain. And they're, like, cutting the base of her skull.
She had a fever of, like, 104.5 and was still just, like, riding her bike outside. It was still very much fighting this within her little self. And, like, I'm getting, like, choked up thinking about it. But, like, I can't imagine, like, my husband is fighting this disease in the car outside the hospital because he can't come
in. He can't come in.
Next to my daughter on a ventilator who, you know, reaching out for me. Like, I don't understand how you don't take that shit seriously. These people, their daughter died because they are on a job helping us.
Who aren't taking it seriously.
Responders. And nobody in government was like, hey girl, let's sit all this shit down. What the fuck? It just I didn't expect for it to
I didn't know it was gonna end.
I didn't know Skylar was gonna be there.
But you know what? I also would say that having not seen it, but what you guys saying, it's important that it's the same thing I said on a different level with Lovecraft. It's important that we know that not everybody's story ends well, because that's the only way you understand that shit is real, right? And it's important, you know. I think even it's actually responsible storytelling on the part of Black Love for sure. Because if everything was just like, we fought it and we came out okay,
even one of the women, who was about to die, was about to check out. There was another couple, and she got it, and she was fucked up. And she's like, "Yo, I'm still fucked up."
Right.
Like I'm still fucked up. Like
therapy for PTSD because, like, she can't get past it. And it was like 9 weeks after she had got it. Now feeling better, but, like, she almost lost both of their children too.
That's so great.
Same thing, like, they didn't know, so they didn't know. They go, we got a little fever, we got a little cold, and, like, meanwhile, nobody knows that it's this brutal, you know, disease.
Your kid gets a fever, like, and they're still eating and drinking and talking to you. You're like, oh, let me get
it. Like, it'll break.
They'll give you a Tylenol, it'll be all right, exactly.
I can't imagine, like, the self-blame, like, all the emotions that they are going through, like, having lost or almost lost a child. It's just, like...
Yeah.
There and I'm grateful, but, like, I can't like that again, and I appreciate a trigger warning the next time you make me cry like that, Jeffrey.
I didn't know. I mean, I just turned around. I was like, oh, it's COVID, because I just thought it was going to be regular Black Love, and I was like, oh, it's COVID, it's interesting. And then I just started watching, and I was like, whoa, this is okay. They're going a whole different place than, you know, the regular Black Love goes. I mean, Black Love, they have their own separate traumas with, you know, their relationships. Yeah.
Amount of, like, authentic Black content and storytelling that we're getting right now, since everybody's Netflix is printing money, so they just throwing
Netflix.
We've never had, and I also just have to, you know, raise the Black woman fist, because we've never had this many women who are the showrunners and creators of Black TV on air at the same time either, because it's P-Valley, Lovecraft, Lena's Joints, what am I missing? Michaela, Issa. I mean, like, it's so much that's just killing it.
Yeah, so killing it. Yes, that was a tough one, man. That Black Love was a tough one. Bro, you want to talk about your boy, Jeffrey Tobin?
Bruh.
Well, I mean, it ain't really much to talk about. Jeffrey Tobin, in the middle of a Zoom
call,
they took a break, and my man decided he was going to rub one out.
He's going to beat this meat.
And I'm like, that was clearly surprising. But what was more surprising was that he was only suspended.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, so what exactly is a fireable offense here? Like, what?
He got to kill somebody on the Zoom.
Yo, like, what constitutes a you got to go situation, my nigga? Like, we ain't asking no questions. Call security. Deactivate that badge.
Word.
Put that shit in one of them banker's boxes, and you getting the fuck out of here immediately. Like, what constitutes that? I just don't know, but you know, he's had. I read a couple articles where he's had some sort of, you know, some spotty issues.
Yeah,
I like that word, spotty.
He's a mess.
And like my nigga, like you dry palming nigga with the laptop up, like
at 2:30. At 2:30. At like 2:30.
The middle of the day, my nigga.
Like now. Like now.
And listen, I'm just gonna say this, and I don't know him, but like, I can't for the life of me imagine or you know, make sense of the fact that he thought he was off the Zoom, right?
That's like, I don't
buy that. I think
he was beaten
off because somebody on that Zoom was tickling his fancy.
Okay.
I think he wanted whoever it was on there to see him in action.
And be like, oh, right? Shit, let me holler at Jeffrey.
He probably thought this was a little show, and then I could just play dumb. Like, I don't know. Like, nigga, who leaves their laptop? First of all, nigga, like, is the porn next to the icon with the Zoom? Like, I'm just trying to grasp.
You got tabs open.
Like, nigga, was there no porn? Was you just going from the spank bank at 2:30 in the middle of the day? What, nigga?
Crazy, B. Crazy. What's also interesting that I've seen, you know, people kind of defending him. Like,
defend that? Like,
there's a whole article that's like, oh, so y'all never beat off on a Zoom before? And everybody...
No, never occurred to me to do such a thing, ever. Well, you know what?
The only thing I could think that might have happened is that, like, if I were to minimize my Zoom screen right now, my camera would still be on me. Y'all would still see me even if I couldn't see y'all. The only thing I can think is that he thought he minimized the screen and therefore wasn't on the Zoom because he couldn't see the Zoom. But even that's still not
And in that case, we might see you going to the kitchen to get a brownie. Yeah. We might see you on the phone talking to your mother or some shit like that. Or rapping
I'm
your
not going
to
do no crazy shit in
You're
front
not
of
not beating off while me and Jeff on the fucking side of the Zoom, my nigga. Like, no.
Nine. What the fuck? What happened?
That he's on camera with some 15-year-old beating off or some shit.
No,
Borat has a new movie coming out, and there's a part where the interviewer is like a young lady who is playing Borat's 15-year-old daughter. She's not really 15, right?
Mm.
And they go to this hotel room that's, of course, rigged with cameras, and she takes the mic off of Giuliani, and he lays on the bed and puts his hand in his pants to touch himself while she's
talking.
And Borat, like, bursts in and is like, no, she's too old for you. She's 15. Like, that's the...
Wow. A good. Fuck Giuliani.
Being filmed or... Any, like, he thought this was a real-life interview, and it was, like, a hot girl doing it.
Fuck that piece of shit. I hope he goes. I hope he dies out of bullshit. Couple things before we jump into the final episode. I just want to mention this other documentary or series that I watched on Netflix, Storm Scene 2, called Bad Boy Billionaires. has basically
I've heard ended. Of it if I didn't watch it.
It was actually, I don't know if you noticed, bro, it was actually supposed to be 4 episodes, but the fourth billionaire dude somehow sued or something and didn't get his joint on. He got
an injunction or something.
Okay. Injunction, so they could put. But it's 3 episodes about these 3 different Indian billionaires and how corrupt they were. And I'm not gonna go into a bunch of detail, but it's a really good watch to see like how these dudes. One dude was born into bread, so he was kind of like in earlier part of his episode, one of the reporters kind of called him Trump, like, oh yeah, you were born into money, like, you know, you got a rich father and da 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 da. And then the other 2 guys were born super poor, and then flipped it and got, one guy got crazy money through jewelry, and another guy basically got money through like Ponzi scheming in India.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting just to see these guys, like,
you know. It's a good watch.
It's a good watch.
Indian culture is super fascinating. Anyway.
It's fascinating to see, you know, how these guys were moving. So I just wanted to mention that. We got a debate tomorrow night. Debate number 3. Who is we?
Who is we?
I'm talking about America. America.
But I'm just saying,
tomorrow night, you just got to watch for the train wreck, because I think
they're going to cut their mics. That's what I'm going to watch.
Which is going to make him spaz.
I want to say exactly that. So I'm going to watch because they're cutting mics. And that, first of all, the fact that they had to institute a new policy where they're going to cut these motherfuckers' mics is crazy, right?
Crazy.
But I'm going to watch, because I didn't watch the last debate, because I don't think we had taped here, but I've told people I cannot watch Trump in real time. I literally can't. I get so in, like, blind rage. So I will watch clips. I will read a whole ass 2,000-word article before I watch Trump in real time. I have to be able to turn. I have to be able to leave. I just need like a clip. Like, I need like a 2-minute clip. I need to be able to come and go and parse it out, because he stresses me the fuck out. Because not only is his voice annoying and his mannerisms and all that shit that he does and the what the fuck, and it doesn't even go with what he's saying. So I don't even know, like, that shit. But also, like, he's fucking, like, the shit he says.
He's stupid. He's stupid as shit.
But when I found out they were cutting mics, I was like, oh, I'm going to watch this shit. I'm going to watch
this shit. Mind me, it's Star and Buck. Well, cut your mic off, nigga. And then also, and he just walked off a 60-minute interview yesterday.
Yeah, and said he was going to air it, like, air it himself before it aired on TV or whatever. He's spiraling and unraveling. I probably will not get through the whole debate, because I was already yelling at Mike Pence through my TV for the vice president at the top of my lungs.
Mike Pence is at the vice terrifying.
Oh yeah, my he God. Is. He's a Stepford husband. Like, he's crazy.
Yeah.
He's like a robot.
The lie so calmly like that. Like,
psychotic.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make it through the whole debate, but I'm going to watch just to see what happens.
Just to see him spaz out. Yeah, like, your man went, I don't know if you saw, he went to Erie, Pennsylvania last night, because he's trying to, you know, get Pennsylvania, he's losing it. And he says that, he's like, you know what? I didn't want to come here. He said before the COVID, we were winning. He was winning. Yeah, he's like, I didn't want to come here before we COVID. We were winning, and I would have never came to Erie. But I had to come because, you know, because of this. So, like, he's like, I'm about to get out of here. It's cold. I don't want to be here. Like, I don't know why I'm here. Like, he's saying instead of people in Erie, they're standing there like, what? He's like, no, I didn't want to come here. I don't want to be here right now. Like, yo, this dude is bananas. So we're gonna.
He's unraveling like a mug. It's crazy.
Like a motherfucker. So the debate should be a train wreck. Let's talk about Ice Cube.
Lord,
no,
thank you.
What you
say? I said no, thank you.
You said no, thank you. Anyway,
no, fuck.
So, oh my God, this nigga Cube. And I'm a Cube fan. Like, I really like Ice Cube. Like,
I'm not even angry at him. Like, whatever. Who keeps putting these, like, completely unqualified rap niggas on this pedestal to, like
they put themselves on, and then their little fanboys
run crazy.
Follow up behind, like, the number of people who are trying to cape for Cube, and there's this false equivalency, right? Because people are like, oh, Snoop can endorse Biden and Cardi can, you know, be talking about politics with Bernie, but y'all just don't want Cube to do it. And I just want to clarify this for anybody else who's thinking that. There is a difference between being a known person and endorsing a actual politician and candidate's platform and policy and deciding that your ass is going to write your own policy and platform with no policy experts, no urban planning experts, no local, no, you know, justice orgs, no fucking community leaders, no.
And not even knowing what it says, shout out to Roland Martin.
And then send them to each candidate team, to each candidate.
Like, they don't take your punk ass seriously.
Demand a fucking audience.
Shit to do.
Demand a fucking audience and then do a fucking press tour about it. Like, the fucking audacity, nigga, who the fuck are you? Like, that's my thing. I'm like, how come everybody's like, well, why didn't Biden meet with Cube and why didn't? And nobody's asking why did Cube think he was the person to write a fucking contract for Black America? Like, how come nobody's asking that question? Like, nigga, who are you?
My thing is like, I mean, and it, you know, we know it's all about clicks and likes. So right now, if you didn't know, you think the leaders of Black America were Ice Cube, T.I., Charlamagne the God,
Killer Mike.
Yo, that's who's leading us right now. Who's leading us right now. Meanwhile, there's, you know, so many people, you know, whether you agree or disagree with people, that's fine. But there's so many, you know, Black people who have studied political science all their lives and economics all their lives and, like you said, urban planning all their lives and so on and so on and so on. Science, you know, to speak about things. And we talking to Killer Mike, Ice Cube, Charlamagne the God, and T.I.
Killer Mike, by the way, I don't know if this was a known thing. He said it in September, but I don't know if it had been referenced last year or whatever. So last year, Killer Mike, who already was like, whatever. So last year, Killer Mike met with Ron DeSantis, who stole the governorship from state.
I didn't know that. I didn't know he met with Ron DeSantis.
And said,
"Oh no, it's Brian Kemp."
Brian Kemp, not DeSantis.
Yeah. DeSantis is Florida. Brian Kemp is Florida.
And said of Brian Kemp, well, when I met with him, no, he said, "I'm a politics and policy don't matter as much to me as character and human decency." Mm-hmm. And as a Southern man, when I met Brian Kemp, I immediately felt, I immediately liked him or something like that. I immediately felt kinship with him or some shit, or he immediately felt familiar to me. And he seemed like a decent person. So you found kinship and liked the opposition candidate of the Black woman, right? And threw your weight behind
Black woman, because you don't like Keisha neither.
And Keisha threw your weight behind this motherfucker talking about, like, what? How am I supposed to take that as a Southern Black man? Because let's say a Black man, we talking about Georgia, you immediately identified with the Southern white man from, like, how else am I supposed to read that than y'all niggas just want access to the shit white men do? How else am I supposed to read this than y'all just want to be part of the good old boys club? Like,
what you got to say, bro? You ain't spoke up yet.
you know, O'Shea is the same dude and has the same political ideology and the same delivery that he did 30 years ago. It's the same nigga. It's the same dude, right? Here's my thing. I personally think that, you know, anybody that listens to dudes like that, like, those are new fools to me. Them niggas are so long gone. I'm not even engaging with you. You niggas want to go spend your money on the Dr. Umar, Tariq Nasheed panels. God bless. You know, I wish you well. You know, go get that school open, my nigga. Like, Cube has been deafeningly silent the prior
every
3 years.
Yeah, the prior every year.
Yeah, right. And so it makes you wonder, when someone comes into play like this, like, he has not been vocal about Senate seats. He has not been vocal about representative seats. He has not been vocal about particularly things that are impacting the state of California directly, right? Like, which has Black people in it, last time I checked, right? He is not identifying or addressing any of those things. What he is doing is he basically has taken a copy and paste of massive plans that have been outlined.
By the way, one of which came from the Biden campaign, which is why the Biden campaign had no need to meet with him.
And in addition to that, it is wildly egotistical and really a who the fuck do you think you are to think that somebody is going to put a presidential campaign on hold to meet with you? Whether you think it's like, dude, we are literally, people are voting. Like, this isn't, you know,
the election started already.
Yeah, like people are voting, my guy.
Millions of people have voted.
Like, the fact that you think that this was a, and I think what really bothered people wasn't that he thought that this was something particularly special, was that he had then doubled down on it, right? And the fact that he was operating, and let me be clear about a couple things. Okay, I'm not an English major and I'm not a finance major, but I do know a little bit about a little bit, okay? And a contract is something that is enforceable by law. None of this shit, my nigga, is enforceable by law. You have no legal ramifications here. You have no political capital. It's not like you got sentence in your pocket and exactly. Yo, we're going to do a little bit of this and we're going to do a little bit of that. You ain't wheeling and dealing, my nigga. Like, so the idea that you've even put this as some sort of contract is fluff and it's barbershop talk and it sounds great to people that don't know no better.
It is exactly, it is a the barbershop other thing is, platform.
The other thing is to negotiate means two things, okay? When you're negotiating with someone, you're either negotiating with someone who is an upstanding person, right? Like this is a person that will keep their word, right? Or you have some sort of leverage.
Mm-hmm.
He's got neither. He's got neither. So you're not negotiating with anybody, bro. Like you're coming hat in hand to
you
ask
also don't
for shit
speak for nobody,
that people
like...
have been asking for and fighting for. Even if you did, you like my nigga, you coming up with you know, it's 3-2 in the ninth inning, and you want to hit a 5-run home run because you want to feel good about yourself, my nigga. And that ain't how none of this works.
None of this works.
So until these guys, for me and in my opinion, until they start to actively participate in the democratic process across the board, and not only when it is a presidential campaign, when they are actively supporting and opposing legislation, shit that's really coming up that's impacting us. I'm not listening to them. It's whatever. What I want to do,
because I think a lot of people still haven't done the knowledge. So I'm going to do a little background on this Cube shit, because for people to think that he's the fucking...
The big three shit?
Yeah, exactly. And all that shit. So it came out, after some reporting, it's come out that Ice Cube and his team have been meeting with the Trump campaign since August. And they've been, you know, trying to talk and come up with this plan and trying to figure out how he could get involved and blah, blah, blah. The reason Ice Cube got pulled into this is because he's partners with a guy named Jeff Kwanis. Jeff Kwanis is the owner of a company called The Firm, which is a huge management company. I think that's disbanded now. Cube and Jeff Kwanis started the Big Three League. They went and met with three guys from Qatar who were going to give them $20 million to fund the league. That meeting was set up by Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon and Jeff Kwanis, Ice Cube's partner, are best friends. So there's always been a Trump element to all of this shit that Cube is trying. Cube has been trying to act like it doesn't exist.
Like he can't, because he put out a 2-page ad in the fucking New York Post, New York Times, something at asking Trump when he meets with the dude from Qatar who was supposed to give him his money to remind him that he was supposed to give him the money.
Exactly. And you know, Jared's been involved and everything. So I'm saying all that to say that there is another huge agenda to what Ice Cube is doing. Trump does nothing just because. Everything with Trump is transactional. You do this for me, I do this for you. That's the only way he moves. He don't just do shit like it's the right thing to do. This whole thing is transactional for Cube. But Cube, like up until recently, has been just trying to act like, I'm in this for Black America. And you know, I'm just doing this, and I don't understand why all you Black people are coming at me, because I just want what's best for us. Well, meanwhile, you want this bread, my nigga. That's what's happening. You want this fucking money. And you're not getting this money. And so now you're doing everything you can do to push Jared and anybody else in the Trump administration to reach out to the Qatari guys allegedly said to Cube and them in the meeting, dude, this is what we, like, he said, we'll give you other money, but you got to tell Bannon to set up the meeting with Trump. And Cuban was like, nah, we ain't gonna get involved with that. And then the Qatari guys was like, this is how it works, my nigga. Like, we're not giving you the money just because. Like, we need something, too. Like, $20 million ain't shit to us.
Right.
But we need this meeting. And so everything has been transactional for Cuba. Now he's in a bind, I guess, because the league is fucked up. You know, he's about to lose his shirt. So he's doing what he could do, but he's trying to mask it under the guise of the blackness. And that's what's really irksome to me, besides everything else that y'all said.
Here's the other problem, though. Like, when you said he was saying... And this is what I've been trying to point out to people. And, you know, niggas will believe surface level bullshit before they will bother to actually flip a page or read.
All day. So they'll just read a little headline, and that's the story.
Yeah. When I point out to people that one of the fundamental issues with Cube's contract is that there is actually no infrastructure. Cube didn't start an organization. Cube didn't create something behind which there are action steps for people to take, or there's follow-up items that can happen for a sustainable, you know, growth and improvement, or any kind of actual, like, you know, outline of, like, this is what we're asking for to happen now. This is what we're asking for to happen later. This is what we're asking for. Like, you just want to put $500 billion towards, like, what the fuck even is that?
And nigga gonna put $500 billion into a Chase account.
What the fuck is that?
With a fucking 501c3 fucking ID number.
And ATM card. Nigga gonna be zelling niggas.
Right. And then he was like, we just gotta make sure it gets to Black businesses. How, nigga?
What the fuck are you talking about?
And like, so yo, this motherfucker was on
TikTok. But this is, but I want to just chime into that, because yeah, that's an important part of this, right? It's because we've watched $3 trillion go into the banking system, and we have watched Black businesses and Black people still be on the short end of the stick when it came to accessing those funds. We're talking about federal funds, my nigga. Literally open for everybody. Okay?
Supposed to be for everybody.
And we still had those hurdles, because there are still issues and still things in place that are preventing us from getting that. So the fact that he thinks that he's just going to magically come up with this number, this shit is magically going to come from the sky, it's magically going to make businesses thrive, and we will now have our, you know, our piece of land and be on
our Black, yeah, the Black contract's fulfilled. Nigga. So yeah, I hate to, like they say, I hate to see it, because I really like Ice Cube's music, man. I like a lot of his movies, and like, I really like the I don't hate him now, but it's just like, god damn, Cube.
I ain't gonna keep this going, but I got a rant.
I got a rant too,
my nigga. Like, him talking about, they called me a sellout when I left NWA. They called me a sellout when I left, when I started doing movies. My nigga, nobody called. Like, stop that. Like, stop.
Literally nobody said that.
Stop.
Never.
Stop the martyrdom, my nigga. Stop. Cut the shit, okay?
Everybody was on Cube's side over NWA side. Nobody said that. And that's the thing, like, the revisionist history shit with niggas, like, I'm so sick of that shit. Nobody said that. Nobody did that. Cube was never in the house. We were all looking to Cube as, like, because first of all, Cube wasn't the first nigga to move into movies. La had already done it. Will had already done it. LL had already moved into TV, right? So it's like, Ice-T had already done it before
Cube. Ice-T,
So Ice-T, not for nothing, to me, is even more gangster in the street than Cube. So, like, if Ice-T
by far.
And we wasn't tripping. Like, people were in support of Cube. You know what I mean? Like, Cube did his thing. So it's like nobody did any of that shit. And like you said, like, just my thing with niggas that makes me so mad, because people be on me about talking about Sean King too, is like, y'all want to talk about people calling out the black man, but how do you not hold the black man responsible for taking advantage of y'all? Like, he's manipulating.
He's manipulating his own people.
His own people. And like, you don't even, like, you ain't got the answers, my nigga. Like, every interview Cube has done, he has been ill-equipped to actually speak to anything in detail. And that's the thing about barbershop bullshit. It all sounds good with the talking points. And Trump is the white person, the white version of barbershop shit, which is why these niggas almost gravitate towards that bullshit. But as soon as you're like, I've been going through this with a friend from high school, he'll just be saying shit. And I'll be like, send me the article where you saw that. Because he'll be like, I read blah, blah. Send that to me. Where did you see that? What is that number? As soon as you ask them, they'll give you data, give you stats, give you links. Give
it
you
goes left.
That shit. They be like, well, nah, I'm just saying it had been. Nah,
I can't find it right. I can't find it right now.
Right. I can't just find it. Fucking talking. And I think what makes me so mad about it is that, first of all, like, to see our peers doing it, and I was talking about this on Twitter, when we know, like, our parents were the civil rights generation, right? So we know what shit could be. So to see us play around with this shit, like, we can afford to. And I think that's the thing. Like, even though I think what people don't really understand about us is that even though the crack era was horrid, we were kind of chilling in the 90s from a political fight standpoint. We had our own shit. We had gang violence. We had the war on drugs. We had teen pregnancy. We were fighting shit on our own level. Like, on a political level, shit was just running, right? We weren't really necessarily like, what's this person doing? What's that person doing? Until, like, Florida stole the election in 2000. Then it was like, well, wait, what's going on? So I think that there is still this sense of, like, because we were almost so coddled by the generation before, it's like, we've done this fight so you can relax. We fought the fight. We won it. Y'all can reap the benefits. There is a carelessness with how we talk about our country's process, right? And it's one thing when you're doing it in your silos, in your living rooms, in your barbershops, and it's just y'all niggas talking shit about conspiracy theories and the system doesn't work. The system doesn't all the way work, but you still got to participate in it or it'll never work. But like, and all I hear complaining, I don't hear solutions. Like, y'all niggas want to vote third party. A third party system will never work unless we change Congress. It don't matter.
It don't matter is what got us here with this clown ass nigga in the White House now.
Exactly.
That's what got us here. Because nothing matters. I just wanted to say sidebar, like, it's just kind of like Dave Chappelle again is a genius because he hit us with that, you know, what does Ja Rule think joke? And that's kind exactly of where we are now. That's kind of what we
Nobody
are now.
Nobody was Ice Cube sitting and, at home like, I really want Ice Cube. No Ice Cube. On yeah. this yeah. As we come towards 11. And then niggas also just don't want to listen. So we were having this conversation. Jeff, I think you came in, but I don't know if you were in here already at this point, on Clubhouse when Cube was doing his interview with Tigger. Okay, so there was a few people. So, like, Isaac Hayes III was in there. Jacob York was in there. Jacob, who actually is working with the Biden campaign in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And there was Just Blaze was in there. And I've gotten to the point where, like, I'm literally, like, holding my breath when black men over 40 start talking about this because I'm so scared of what they're going to say. But they were really, like, holding down a conversation of explaining, like, why this shit is important and why Cube has his head up his ass, right? And I think, like, what people didn't want to hear is that they were like, well, Trump met with him and Biden didn't. And what people were trying to explain is, like, Biden had a plan already. And some of the stuff in Cube's plan actually it already exists. Like, you just don't know about it. And that's the thing with niggas. Like, if somebody didn't sit it right in front of their eyes, if it didn't go down their timeline, they're not looking for shit. They're not researching shit. They're not looking up nothing. If it didn't cross their path, they just assume it never happened. Well, I didn't see it. I didn't hear it. I didn't whatever. So it's like, Biden didn't have to meet with Cube because they're working on that shit.
Well, Biden doesn't be cute with Cube because who the fuck's Cube?
They told him
we will discuss this after the election.
Because which is
fascinating that anyone would take that as a slight or an insult, considering the fact that even outside of a presidential campaign, do you think you would be able to get on Joe Biden's? You getting on Vice President Joe Biden's calendar within this like 2 weeks, my nigga?
This nigga said, I always want to talk to power. Cube literally said, I always want to talk to power. That's one thing. He said that literally. I always want to talk to power. And, like, he also really seems to think that he, like, that he needs to be in the conversation. And it's like, why? And he also said that he at least wishes that Biden had bullshit him. He was like, politicians lie all the time, so it tells me a lot that the Biden campaign wouldn't even promise me this. So it's like, you would rather they promise you some shit that they're not going to deliver on? Make it make sense.
This nigga here, man, now I know why you left NWA broke.
Right.
Well, you got the final word, Inca.
I just want to say that conspiracy theories have always existed, but the internet have turned them into collective delusion.
Right.
And it's dangerous at this point in time.
Validated them. Kanon is a perfect example.
Anybody who knows what the fuck's going on knows you have a choice between two niggas, and it's very much life and death. And if you say anything other than that, I have nothing that I want to hear from you.
Yeah, that's legit. Literally life and death. Literally. Like 200-something thousand dead and still going. Or
he told niggas to stop reporting the numbers. So if you look at the website and see how many pneumonia deaths we have, you might have kind of an accurate coronavirus barometer.
Oh, that's another thing he said
pneumonia
in this speech.
Pneumonia deaths are way up, but anyway.
Another thing he said in his speech yesterday, the day before, he said, every time I turn on CNN, they still just talk about corona. Nobody wants to talk about that no more.
And he said if Biden is elected, this was actually a threat. He was like, if Biden's elected, he's going to listen to the scientists.
He's going to listen to the scientists. Nigga, what are you anyway? So
like we're in the upside down. Logic is illogical now. And I want us to bring back and normalize telling people they are stupid again. The internet has made people feel like everybody's opinion is valid. And everybody gets a voice, and you have to actually engage in idiocy in good faith as though there is really a debate to be had. Science isn't like the Trump campaign don't say believe in science. Science isn't something you believe in or don't. The shit is.
It is.
Science is. 2 plus 2 equals 4.
Like, period.
Who is not to believe in or not? You either understand it or you don't, but it is, whether you fucking believe in it or not, right? So it's like, these things are not up for debate. It's not a matter of opinion. These shit, it is. And I think, like, we have given way too much leverage because there's also, this is a whole nother rant, but there's, like, this resurgence of Ayn Randism that argues that there is no right or wrong. Everybody's own opinion is what it is. And so, but the idea that we can't actually tell niggas, because, you know, that's always people think, oh, you disagree with me. Because, no, it's not that I disagree with you. You're fucking wrong. You're wrong. Yeah. Sometimes
your opinion can be based in bullshit.
In bullshit. Exactly. You can have it, but it can be wrong, right? And it's not everything is debatable. Some shit is just wrong. And like, when I look at the fact that Kanon actually has fucking people on the ballot in certain areas, started as a fringe conspiracy group. These niggas are tinfoil hat motherfuckers all day. They are based, the whole group, the whole organization is centered around the fact that they thought that Hillary Clinton was eating little kids out of a pizza parlor. Mm-hmm. And they have politicians on the ballot. Are you fucking kidding?
Collective delusion.
Tell people they are fucking stupid and stand by that shit. Because they're like, it's ridiculous. And people just feel like they can say any fucking thing and not be ashamed of it. Like, y'all niggas are stupid. Period.
Yeah, let's go. All right, so I'm going to wrap it up. We're wrapping it up. I got just two quick things. I got to speak to Jazzy B from Soul to Soul on Clubhouse last night.
How was that?
It was fucking awesome.
What did you talk about?
Awesome. He was being brought in.
Like, oh, he was doing his onboarding
thing. So first, I just showed mad love, like, bro, like the way you put your game down was unbelievable. And then I asked him about Back to Life, and I said, what was the science in the fact that the first 2 minutes of that song is a cappella? Like that, you know, the people weren't doing that. People still don't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like the fact that there's 2 full minutes of a cappella before the beat drops. And he said that, you know, he was I don't know if people know that, he had the biggest sound system in London. They were called Soul to Soul. They would go like different areas of London, Brixton and stuff. And like, and go to clubs. And like, he was like a massive DJ in London. And he said that what they would do is they would play a Dr. Martin Luther King speech and then drop a beat 2 minutes later for this, this song they had called Fair
Play. Like WBLS shit.
Exactly. And so he said, we wanted to take that energy because it became a thing. Like everybody would go to their shit waiting for the Dr. Luther King speech, waiting for the beat to drop because they knew it was a thing. And they wanted to take that energy and put it onto record. So they did it with Karen Wheeler singing the 2 minutes and then dropping the beat because they
and
knew.
And that's what made it so legendary.
Yeah, it's legendary. Jeff? And he talked about Belly. He talked about, don't start, Inca.
Write this Belly. Fucking book. I mean it.
Like, I've been telling him, I'll help him, and he doesn't want to listen to me.
I tell him 90 words a minute if you want to just get on
it. I told him, I said, I will
whatever we got to do.
I was like, literally, give me, like, just some topics, and I will ask together. You questions, nigga, so you can just
All right. And he talked about Belly using the record and how he said that's exactly the way the record was supposed to be used.
Right.
With them walking in slow and then the beat drop. The other thing I wanted to mention is whoever in New York City decides to go out to dinner and eat in one of them goddamn pods is playing themselves.
Yeah.
You're sitting in the Rona. You're sitting in the Rona.
So nasty.
The Rona is trapped in the plastic with you.
The thing is, if you're outside, you might need a separation, but like you said, yeah, you're in the plastic with the
in the plastic. What are we doing, bro? I don't want to go to dinner that bad.
It's
to
not
give somebody my money eating a goddamn pot like in a tent, in a plastic tent. Somebody farting there, it's caught up in there. Come on, what are we doing, man? Rat might slide up under the bottom of the shit. You know,
rat.
Niggas, girl running
New
out.
York City got all kinds of their own problems.
Oh, the fuck are we
doing? I just ate out. I just went to a restaurant in the city for the first time last week and ate.
You ain't in the pod though, did you?
No, we were like outside open air type.
Okay,
the weather was so nice. I'm trying to work my way back outside because a lot of people are.
Well, it's getting cold now, shit.
I know, but a lot of people are doing like social distance meeting up in public in small groups. I really haven't been doing it at all.
I'm cool with being in somebody's house.
Wrapping up, but bye, Sean.
All right, bro.
All right, guys.
All right, we're wrapping up anyway. On that note, thank you for bearing with us through the technical difficulties. We're back, Inca. We got to find another show to watch together since Lovecraft is over.
This Is Us is coming back next Tuesday.
Oh yeah,
I never watched that.
Super excited.
It's a really
I've never good watched.
I have like a whole list of shows upstairs that I'm like super excited for them to come back.
Send me the list because we're gonna lock in on one or two. Send me the list. So we're gonna lock
I'm always in. Happy to join you guys. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for and you enjoy your PTO.
I'm excited.
And you have a good time tonight at dinner.
Have a good night.
Yeah, you have a good night. Tell Trav. Yeah, look at us shaking the shoulder. Oh, shit, Trav. You better drink some green juice, Trav. All right, so we're gonna wrap it up. We'll see y'all next week.
All right, guys, later.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.